Hey, hip cats and kitties, welcome to the Wrestling Poetry Slam. Next up, all the way from Minnesota, the Dirty Dog Darcy, reading his masterpiece, As in Diesel Fuel.
Thank you. Here's my poem entitled As in Diesel Fuel. On this unholy of summer nights, smack dab in the Nutter Center, location, Dayton, Ohio. Up on the menu for the night, heartbreak cocaine, a sharp shooting cane, and a brontosaurus burger. The macho one set alongside a royalty from Beverly Hills, and a royalty of the barbecue biz, mullets, bow ties, and Mike Yoda. My night's complete, a perfect athlete and a narcissist. Buttons I dropped for the heavyweight gold. Well, Jim Duggan dropped his 2x4 on this night. Bam, bam, bammed his way back to Mid-South wrestling. If you ever wondered how to make a Mack truck go, watch a 93 Heartbreak interview. Sit with a pound of booger sugar. You'll soon find out. As in diesel fuel, that which makes a Mack truck go.
I can read you like a book. I have beaten you before, and I will beat you again.
One man, one belt, one title, one world heavyweight champion, brother. That match will be the one that the whole world watches, brother.
Damn it. And you know what really hurts a lot of people out there? If you know any history about Ric Flair, you know that the difference between me and just about everybody else is I was born with a golden spoon in my mouth.
Are you just Barbara Walters all of a sudden, Lillian? Since when did you just become all business, Lillian? How about a simple, hey, Rock, how you doing, Rock? Did you enjoy lunch today, Rock? Did you like your pancakes, Rock? How about something like that? You need to let your feelings go.
Come on, the guy is a dinosaur, and Yokozuna gobbled him up like a big old brontosaurus burger. Well, if you want to know what his name is,
yeah,
I'll give you the info. His name is Diesel, as in diesel fuel, that which makes a Mack truck go.
The Heartbreak Hotel.
Turn out the lights. It's checkout time.
Yeah, what are you simple about?
From the intersection of Sunset Boulevard and Bad Street, Minnesota, you're listening to Main Event Status Radio. I am the Dirty Dog Darcy, joined, as always, by Mr. 90210 himself, Mr. Beverly Hills. How's it going, Beverly?
It's going awesome. I'm running on fumes, running on diesel fumes, if you will, Dirty Dog.
You know one thing I would suggest if you're running on diesel fumes, Daddy-O?
Should I do?
Take a listen. Listen very, very closely. I just opened up a beautiful, cold can of Mellow Yellow.
Oh, I wish I had one, Dirty Dog.
It goes, my Mill-Yo is my diesel fuel.
All right. So, Dirty Dog.
Obviously, I wanted to thank, once again, Jason Mann for coming on the podcast last week. Our special cast number 3, covering the history of SummerSlam. We went, I think, 2 hours and 45 minutes on talking about SummerSlam and all that. And I feel like, honestly, I feel like we could have gone more in depth if I would have added in more of my 2 cents. And
oh my gosh, I'm sure we could have gone another 2 hours and 45 minutes, but it was really fun as is, and it was awesome having Jason on.
So yeah, if you guys haven't checked that episode out, go back and download that. You know, it's 2 hours and 45 minutes. I think well worth your listen and all that. So, and I know on episode 3, I talked a little bit about how I listened to the first half of The Swerve by Vince Russo. I wanted to open up this podcast by talking about it since I talked about it 2 weeks ago on episode 3. And how I said, you know, I listened to half of it, you know, I might download episode 2, and granted, you know, when this podcast drops, would be, you know, new, more details might come up, but I kind of want to talk about Vince Russo and the whole TNA Impact Wrestling stuff with you, Beverly, if you don't mind.
Shoot.
Okay. well, since I work, my shoot job is, I work in a warehouse for 45 to 50 hours a week, and I'm able to listen to my MP3 player, my iPod. And most of the time, you know, about 40 hours a week at work, plus sometime outside of work, I listen to podcasts. So I heard, okay, Vince Russo is having a podcast. I'm also listening to it, since I listen to MLW Radio with Kurt Bauer, MSL, Conan from WCW, NWO, Mexican Wrestling, and they had Vince Russo on, I don't know, a month or two ago, and how he, you know, had started his own website, writing about whatever he wants to talk about, whatever, and he's coming out with a new podcast. I'm like, okay, you know, if it's about an hour, I'll download it, try it out, you know. So, and it was pretty, the sound quality was pretty decent, but I wanted to strangle Vince Russo. because he...
Oh, nobody wants to strangle us after they listen to our podcast, Dirty Dog.
Well, they quit listening to it. That's why I quit listening to Vince Russo. But please, keep listening to us. but yeah, he taped it on a Sunday and released it Tuesday night at midnight. And so he talked about, you know, the previous Thursday's Impact and, like, Monday Night Raw, that's ruddy old. So that rubbed me off the wrong way. Then he's like, well, I don't want to criticize the writing because I'm a former creative writer, and I don't want to critique that. Well, that's a crock of crap since Spike TV canceled TNA Impact because Vince Russo was strictly hired by them, and Spike TV doesn't like Vince Russo.
Right.
So one, Vince Russo, you can suck it. And two, yeah, I don't care. I'm throwing no punches. I'm running off of Mellow Yellow Fuel, daddy-o.
Dirty Dog is on fire.
And Vince Russo was talking about how much better TNA Impact is than WWE. You know, I guess it's, you know, to each their own for personal preferences, whatever. But come on, Russo. People knew you were writing for TNA Impact, and after it came out that you were writing for them, you know, TNA was lying about it, just to stay on Spike TV and Viacom, they just rubbed me off the wrong way. I'm like, I'd rather be rubbed off the wrong way and not listen to episode 2, you know, right away, than continue to listen to it, than him pissing me off, than me quit listening to it, because I only wasted it, I guess, hour and a half of my life. Thanks, Vince Russo. But, yeah, I guess that's my spiel from episode 3 2 weeks ago that I said I was going to listen to at least rest of episode 1, maybe episode 2, but I don't know if you heard about it, Beverly, but Vinny Rue is thinking about, or actually, you know, like $3, you can pay him $3 a month for a free podcast, two more podcasts, him covering, like, WWE TV, then Impact Wrestling, which ain't going to last much longer, Vince Russo. Thank you very much again. And, oh yeah, those two podcasts. And for the free podcast, he'll put in like a 20 minutes of an interview that he had. Then included with the subscription, you get like an hour and a half, however long the interview was. Yeah, I put on the free episode, like the snippet. He'll give you the full length as a video podcast, as a vodcast. I'm like, I'm sorry, Vince Russo, but I want to give you $3 every month. You suck. You pissed me off. Thank you for at least giving me an hour of your time to listen to you once just to piss me off.
Wow. That's the anger that I'm spewing forth right now, Dirty Dog. Let's talk about better times.
If you want to talk about better times, if you will.
Let's talk about 1995.
You know, I'm still on a rant, damn it.
Oh, no.
I get something else off my chest.
All right.
Which, by the way, we are talking about Monday Night Raw from Monday, April 3rd, 1995, episode 105. and which ties in with a show that we're covering, which I want to talk to you about, Beverly.
Okay.
You know, just like episode 3, I went on, you know, Wikipedia and Google search 1995 results of Raw for I can figure out who all the jobbers are. All
right.
And I found out that they taped this almost a month prior.
Oh, really?
So they almost taped, you know, this week's episode 105, 106, and 107 on March 13th, 1995.
Really?
Really.
Huh.
They could have lied to me about that. But that's what I found out. You know, I can understand, especially back then, taping, you know, a few weeks worth of Raws, especially when they're only an hour, on the same night. You know, it could serve money. But why do post-Mania angles, like, 3 weeks before WrestleMania?
I don't know. It's pretty weird, especially because you got the new tag team champions coming out.
And especially that...
Tisk, tisk.
And especially that the WWF champion issued out another challenge to his WrestleMania challenger.
Yeah, right on.
And the WrestleMania challenger's bodyguard turned on him. Spoiler alert. Yet you'll see the bodyguard, you know, protecting the challenger at WrestleMania.
Right.
So that rubbed me off a little bit. While you giggle a little bit, I'm going to take a sip of my Mellow Yellow.
Do it up, man. That's good.
Hey, I'm a lot happier now. Thank you, Beverly, for letting me go off on the tangent, and thank you for listeners for still listening to us. Which, I'm surprised if you're still listening to us after my rant. But if you are, you must either like us, or you don't like Vince Russo. Or both. Oh, okay, then. So we might as well... Are you still there, Beverly?
I'm still here, man.
Good, you're very, very silent. So we might as well go to the show, then. The show opened with pictures from the night before WrestleMania 11.
Right.
With the main event being Bam Bam and Lawrence Taylor.
Okay, now, here you go. Dirty Doc.
Yes.
How many of these football players have you ever heard of before?
Just Steve Mongo McMichael, because he went on to WCW to wrestle.
I looked at this and I go to myself, I know that Dirty Doc Darcy has never seen any of these football players except Steve Mongo McMichael because he was a wrestler.
Well, honestly, I saw them because I watched WrestleMania 11 before, but
yeah,
besides the wrestling connection, well, I guess including Steve Mongo, I don't know any of them.
Oh, these are some good football players, man. Chris Newman, Ken
Walton. I am in a pro wrestling bubble. What can I say? What can I say?
Ken Norton's dad was a boxer, so that...
Fair enough, fair enough.
Whenever Ken Norton Jr. would score a touchdown, he would punch the goalpost. Does that tie it closer to wrestling?
Sure. What's that one, I don't know why I'm drawing a blank of his name, but the one wrestler in WCW who was in NWO who made it big in Japan.
Scott Norton?
Yeah, are they related?
No.
Okay, I had to ask.
There's one major difference between Scott Norton and Ken Norton.
What?
Scott Norton is Caucasian, while Ken Norton is African American.
Whatever. I don't care. Hey, I locked the African planes, man.
We talked
about this on a previous episode, okay? When we were referencing Reverend Slick.
All right. We're in Poughkeepsie.
Akeem, the African dream, is also white daddy. Oh, he's from Africa, so fair whatever.
Enough. All right. Before we get in trouble, here we are. We're in Poughkeepsie.
Okay. We might as well finish. Yeah, the show opened with pictures from WrestleMania the night before with, you know, Bam Bam for his LT, some pictures from the WWF title match between Diesel and Shawn Michaels, and pictures of the newly crowned tag team champions Owen Hart and Yokozuna.
Yokozuna. Yep.
Then we go to... Yeah, classic Raw video, which, you know, from 95, at least they changed up the video package a little bit.
Yep, I noticed that too. A lot of at least now they're using actual pictures of the wrestlers as opposed to, like, shadows.
Yes, which, It's nice and thankful, and I appreciate that.
I do too.
Now, like you said, we're in a Poughkeepsie?
Poughkeepsie.
Whatever. In the Mid-Hudson Civic Center. And we're welcome to Monday Night Raw with Vince McMahon and the host of the Jim Cornette Experience, Jim Cornette.
Yep.
And McMahon put over
Vince, look at Vince McMahon's turtleneck in this one.
It was wonderful.
It says Monday Night Raw on it.
And McMahon put over that Cornette is a manager of the new tag team champions. And obviously Cornette put them over.
Yep.
What can you do? Then are we going to do the opening match? Bob Sparkplug Holly versus Hakushi.
Right on.
With Shinji? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Shinja.
Shinja, okay. Wanted to ask.
Yeah. Mr. Saito. Yeah. Or Akio. No. Shoot. I forget. No, Akio Sato. Okay. He was in the Orient Express, the first version.
I do like his beard.
Yeah, like if you watch, I think he was on one of the summer suns I just watched. But like, not the Orient Express with Tanaka and the mask guy, because the mask guy was white back when they were actually it was actually a Japanese guy. He was in the Orient Express. But anyways.
I wanted to ask you, when did Bob Sparkplug Holly change his name to Bob Sparkplug Holly from Thurman Plug?
I don't know. He wasn't Thurman Plug for very long, though, because when was the one that we watched?
Wasn't it 94 sometime?
It wasn't 94. Okay, I guess it could have been.
So within a year, I guess like 9 months before this?
Yeah, I guess I think it's pretty quick after he debuts. He goes from being Thurman Plug to Bob Sparkplug Holly, which is a good switch.
Yeah, definitely. Then obviously, the 1-2-3 kid joined Holly in the ring after Holly came down.
Yep.
Then Jim Cornette put over Hakushi, saying that he's the greatest Japanese athlete.
I really like Hakushi. He's really one of my favorite wrestlers from this time period. He has some awesome pay-per-view matches. He really moves around the ring well. And also, yeah, he's good in Japan too. His name is Jinsei Shinzaki. And was it Barely Legal, the ECW pay-per-view, or one of the Heatwave pay-per-views? He and Hayabusa team up to take on Rob Van Dam and Sabu, and they have an awesome match, too. He's a really good wrestler.
I know a couple podcasts ago when we were joined by Fran Derry and Lucas, the intern, talking about the WWE Network. I know Fran did mention Heatwave 98, that where Hakushi was on.
Yep, that's the one. Yeah. I really like him. I don't know. I've always like wanted to talk about this or think about it, whatever. Like, you know, there's never been a Japanese WWF champion, you know? And I feel like, I don't know. It's, come on. They're calling him the modern day kamikaze.
Yeah, that's
about as racist as it gets. That would be like having a German wrestler and calling him the modern day Hitler. You know,
yeah.
It's like the same exact thing, and you could never get away with doing that. That's awful, and so is this.
Talk about racism. I know it's been in the news a little bit about Lana comparing, you know, talking about, you know, the current events with the Malaysian flight being shot down in Russia.
Right.
What do you feel like is worse? Lana bringing that up at WWE Battleground 2014, or Hakushi being called the modern day kamikaze?
Oh, modern day kamikaze for sure. Just because, like, that's, I don't know, that's like taking something from history, and you know that was, you know, suicide pilots, right? And but to, you know, to compare that and call someone that, that's, I don't know, that's racist. I think making him like just this caricature with like the little characters painted on him and stuff, it's bad. Just because he's such an awesome wrestler, and I feel like he could have been a lot more than what he was.
To try to bring it on a lighter note, is it a kamikaze and alcoholic drink?
It can be. Yes, it can.
I'm happy I made you crack a little laugh. Because I am also happy that you put over Hakushi just as much as Jim Cornette did on color commentary.
Well, me and Cornette, we're buds.
Which is one thing I appreciate from the color commentator.
Yeah, I thought he did a good job this week.
So we might as well go into the match.
Go ahead.
My first note is a pretty slow match.
Yeah, something even slower pops up in a little bit. I'll get to. But
yeah, so you might as well get to that because my next note is the interference. So
okay, yeah. So the 1-2-3. So after a little bit, after a few minutes, the tag team champions Owen and Yoko come out
right before the commercial break. By the way.
Yep. And they hang out there for a while there's the action is still happening in the ring. And then 1-2-3 Kid eliminates Owen in the corner. And I wrote that after he kicks him, Yoko glacially moves toward them.
I noticed that.
He's moving so slow.
How can you not notice him? Wait, next, I wrote down the Owen tried to jump the Kid, and the Kid laid him out with a chop and a kick. Then yep. Yoko snuck up behind the kid. Yoko snuck up behind the kid and kicked him in the back of the head.
I don't think Yoko sneaks anywhere.
Well, maybe to KFC. I mean, I know. While you're laughing, I did write down a line that Jim Cornette said about that.
Okay.
Saying that, yeah, Yoko crushed that kid like a bug. It made me laugh too. When I heard that, like, I had to write down that one liner.
It's a good one.
Then my next note after that was a superplex happened.
Who gave it?
I don't know.
Oh no.
Well, I guess this match review kind of sucks.
It was all right. It was. We're really underselling it, but I liked this match a lot. I thought Hakushi and Bob Holly actually worked together really well, and they were able to go back and forth a lot. But I think what our notes really show is that this match was really just kind of a backdrop to the storyline that was happening.
And
even though it is a good match, the reason why we don't remember everything is because it was more to set up what was going to happen with these two teams.
Yeah, because I did wanted to ask, who moved worse at the end of their life, Yokozuna or Andre the Giant?
Oh, man. Well, that's kind of morbid to think about, I guess. But
well, I thought of that when I saw Yokozuna trying to sneak up behind the kid.
Well, but this is... Dude, it gets way worse for Yokozuna. Have you ever seen the Legends of Wrestling pay-per-view?
No.
Yeah, it's like 10 times worse.
Okay.
He's moving slow, but he's still got like 2 more years in the WWF.
True.
But I don't know. Andre was really bad. I don't know. I don't really want to say one or the other.
Yeah, that's fine. Then do you have any other notes besides the finish?
No.
Okay. Hakushi captured the victory after Yoko tripped Holly, and Hakushi nailed Holly with a running senton.
Yep, and I really liked that backsplash. It looked good.
Okay, what did you rate this match?
I rate this match 2.25 stars.
I rated this match 1/2 star.
Oh my gosh, really?
I felt it was kind of dull. The fans weren't into the match. And most of the excitement I got were when the new tag team champions came down and interfered.
All right, fair enough.
Then we got a hotline number if we want some WrestleMania 11 merchandise.
I took it down. I'm going to call
1-800-TITAN-91.
Awesome. Okay.
1-800-TITAN-91. That's if you want some WrestleMania 11 merchandise 19 years later.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So then we go to the WrestleMania recap with Jim Ross.
Yeah, how Jim Ross is standing at a live arena or whatever, telling us that WrestleMania was pretty unpredictable. Okay, Jim Ross.
Unless if you were at Poughkeepsie 3 weeks prior.
Yes. And he was I guess everybody was talking about LT and Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah, what'd you think about Bam Bam's press conference that they showed?
I can tell there was plenty of seeds on a Bam Bam face turn.
Oh yeah, definitely. He was very like sorry for what had happened, and
yeah, he doesn't know where he stands with the $1 million corporation.
Yep, he's looking forward to moving ahead and all that.
Yeah, then JR put over the I Quit match between Bret Hart and Mr. Backlund with Roddy Piper as a special guest referee.
Yep. Ross made a funny slip when he said that Hart made Backlund I Quit.
Yes. Oh, Jim Ross. That was a slobber knocker mistake.
Yep. Then they showed Undertaker versus Bundy.
The Undertaker.
And apparently...
Larry Young?
Yeah, Larry Young was a Major League Baseball umpire, was the ref. Because
I wrote down Larry Young was a referee, and behind Larry Young in parentheses, I put down, who?
I put, what?
Who is Larry Young? Do you know who he is?
As they wrote, he's a Major League Baseball umpire.
Okay.
I think maybe we talked last week or maybe the week before about that in 1994 the Major League Baseball had a player's strike.
Yeah.
And I think at this point they were still under that strike, so that's why they had the ump there or whatever. I don't know.
Makes sense.
No, not really.
Well, I'm just saying. Larry Young needs to make some money, too, you know?
I'm sure that's what they said.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then
whatever, Thomas steals the air.
Yes. Then JR sends us back to Vince, and Vince is in the ring.
Yep.
And Vince McMahon welcomes... Big Daddy Cool Diesel, the WWF champion.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans go crazy. Yay! When
they really liked him.
Hit, you know, the theme song.
Yeah, you sound like Tugboat.
Oh, whatever, I don't care. Then, yeah, Vince tells us the WWF is running on diesel fuel.
You know, know what? I just figured out.
What?
Even though this was like 3 weeks before WrestleMania, they did everything to not give it away to these Poughkeepsie guys. Because did you notice that Diesel never said last night at WrestleMania?
Yeah.
Like, he just said last night or, like, the last time I faced you.
I guess that makes sense, yeah.
And Owen and Yoko didn't come out with the titles.
I guess I didn't notice that.
So all they had to do was just kind of like add in the stuff afterward.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But I guess that makes me scratch my head with what happened at the end of the night, though.
Yeah, I don't know. They could always just write it off like that Sid was acting weird.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
Then McMahon asked Diesel if Sean wants a rematch, would he accept? Diesel said that it was Sid's fault for Sean losing, and Michaels deserves a rematch.
Uh-huh.
Do you have anything, any other notes or thoughts about that Diesel's interview? Oh, that's right. Yeah, Diesel also said that Michaels should lose the bodyguard for the rematch.
Yes, yep, that he should leave him at home, right.
Planting seeds for what's going to happen later on in the night.
Right on, yep. No, I don't have anything else on that.
Okay, then we go to a commercial, and then we come back with a fancy commercial.
Yeah.
Also, like,
I wrote that rich people.
Rich knobs are sitting around a table saying that they want WWF to perform every night of the week.
Yeah, they're talking about, like, stuff that you might say that they're talking about the opera or, like, Broadway or something, because they're like, oh, the costumes were beautiful. And the moves they're doing are amazing. But then, they're talking about the WWF.
Then in parentheses, I did say, don't worry, they will in due time. Referring to the WWE Network.
Right on.
Just saying. Then we go to the next match, the Allied Powers in Lex Luger and the British Bulldog against Well Done with Harvey Wimpleman.
Yep. Allied Powers come out with two kids.
Yes. I hope they weren't their kids.
I doubt it.
Good.
So, Allied Powers, have you said who the Allied Powers are yet?
Lex Luger and the British Bulldog.
Word up.
And I wanted to ask you, whatever happened to Well Done?
Well, okay.
Were they overcooked?
Because I think one of them's dead.
Were they overcooked?
No.
Well, so, Well Done.
So Well Done, they were a tag team in the 80s who had a lot of success in both Memphis and Puerto Rico called the Southern Rockers. Like, last time we did a regular cast, we talked about, like, imitator teams, and I put down the Rockers.
Yeah.
And the Southern Rockers are one of those teams. And they had some success, like I said, in Puerto Rico and
Mid-South.
Memphis. Yeah, before they came here. Oh my gosh, apparently they're both dead.
That's no good.
Oh no.
Okay, well, I don't want to talk about their deaths. I want to talk about their tights.
I want to talk about that too, but I also want to talk about their deaths.
Okay, well,
so
talk about their deaths, please.
I'm a bad person.
Yes, you are. That's why I love you.
One died. What? It says that one died in 1994. This is in 1995. What's happening?
So I guess the internet lies to us. Get
stuff together.
Maybe Vince Russo wrote it.
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh. Now I'm... Oh, okay. I understand. Okay. That's because this... they started out... Whatever. One of them's still alive. Rex Good. King is still alive. Steve Dahl's dead.
Good.
Okay. Okay, now let's talk about their freaky, freaky tights. Are they like a thong?
That's what I was wondering, too.
Well, you're not going to get the answer from me.
I didn't like their tights.
They're weird. They look like thongs.
If you and I ever become professional wrestlers and take team, I refuse to wear tights like that.
I'm fine with that, man.
But
you know what? They're good. I like Well Done. And it's too bad that they're just like a jobber team and they have Harvey Whippleman as their manager, because I thought they were a good part of this match. And when they were in control, I liked when they were in control a lot better than when the Allied Powers were in control.
Okay, then we might as well get into the match. My first note was Bulldog and Luger hit a double gorilla press slam at the start of the match.
I wrote that they did a double botch gorilla slam. Did you see neither of them hit it clean? They both dropped their guy before they were able to throw him down.
Yes, then Well Done hit the finish maneuver of the world's greatest tag team.
Oh, okay, that's what that was. Yeah. I just wrote that it was a cool move.
I don't remember what it's called. I guess for Vince's sake, it's a what a maneuver.
That was definitely a what a maneuver. Yeah, but
I don't
remember
what it was called, but I do remember the world's greatest tag team used as their finisher. Yeah.
Didn't they call it something dumb, just like the world's greatest finisher or something like that?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think that's what it was called.
Okay. I guess my next note was interaction between Jim Cornette and Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
Cornette said he was dropped right on his head. McMahon replied he didn't hurt anything. That made me laugh, too.
Yeah. So despite their kind of mistakes at the beginning of the match, I think Allied Powers is a good use for these two.
I totally agree with you.
For Bulldog and Luger, you know, especially at this time, because like Luger's days as a main eventer, I think in the WWF, if not past, are at least cooled. Like he needs to cool off for a while. Before they heat him up again, if they wanted to. And I think he works really well with Davey Boy Smith, too. So I think this is a good use for them. And it's too bad it doesn't last very long. But I like these two as a tag team.
What's your thoughts on their theme song?
Well, what was it even, really?
Like the combination of a mix of their two theme songs.
Oh, that was fine. I didn't have any real notes on it.
Okay, well, I got the finish of the match if you're ready for that.
Go for it.
A double team maneuver happened when the Bulldog held up one of the Duns, and Luger bounced off both ropes, jumped in the air, and hit his running forearm.
I liked it, because it was like, I don't know, it's like Lex Luger's normal finisher, but with the added bear hug slam part.
Yeah.
It was so cool.
Yeah, the Allied Powers won, whatever. What do you rate this match?
Star and 3/4.
I rated this match a 1.5 star.
You are stingy.
I rated that match a 0.5 star because it was, being short helped the match out. I felt like this match was more of a jobber match.
Sure.
And I felt bad for Well Done being jobbed out. I guess Well Done was overcooked.
I feel bad that 2/3 of them are dead.
Yes. Then Pamela Anderson, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, another hot blonde who I should know but I don't, and another dude that I don't know
who's Nicholas that. Nicholas DeTuro. Like he talked way too long, too.
Like I said, another dude who I don't know who was at Mania. They all had a good time plugging WrestleMania 11.
Yeah, whatever. I want to talk with Nicholas DeTuro.
Okay.
He talked for way too long.
Yes.
He was like the main person.
Yes.
Didn't put his name up, which they should have, because who the heck knows who Nicholas DeTuro is except for me.
Yes.
He had a dumb bow tie on.
Yes. And a nasty mustache.
It was like boxing the whole time.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Then we might as well go into the next match, the WWF Women's Title match.
Yeah.
With champion.
Let's talk about this match. I like this match a lot.
With Bull Nakano, the champion, versus Alondra Blaze.
Yeah, Bull Nakano was totally wearing a dead swan.
Yes. But before we go in the match, when the ladies were coming up, McMahon was by himself at the announcer's table.
Right.
Then he was questions where Cornette ran off to. The Cornette ran back at the start of the match, and he had a contract that was signed putting over the next week's main event.
Yep.
Which is features Bret Hart, the 1-2-3 Kid, and Hardcore Holly versus Hakushi and the Tag Team Champions.
Yes.
And did you even see Jim Cornette sneaking back to the announcer's table?
No.
So I question if Jim Cornette actually ran off.
I would put my money that he did not.
Yeah, same here. Then, if you want, you can get into the start of the match.
Okay, so, I wanted to say that Vince, I don't have the context of it, but Vince goes, "We're talking about America. We're talking about Poughkeepsie."
Oh, Vince.
So it started, Blaze did a really cool kind of Hurricane Rana flip out of the corner on Nakano, but then Bull pops right up and does a really awesome lariat on Alundra. I thought it was moving so fast. Alundra was flying around. Like, that was the story was kind of that she couldn't keep Bull Nakano down because Bull Nakano was so much bigger than her, but she was using these kind of flying moves to try to stop her.
Yeah, because I guess that's one thing that kind of bothered me about the match was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kept on, quick. You know, Alondra hit a bunch of German suplexes and kept on getting two counts, and both of them got up and hit the next move. You know, I felt like it was a moves match.
Oh, I liked it.
Fair enough.
But I also liked when Bull slowed it down with a sharpshooter, but then she turned it around and she grabbed Alundra by the neck, kind of turning it into, I don't know, kind of like a prawn hold. That looked really cool.
Yeah, I noted that, and that looked pretty awesome and painful.
I wrote that it was a total what a maneuver, but I don't even care. It was a good one.
Now, I did note that after that submission, Bull hit a pile driver and only got a 2 count.
Yep, that was a really good pile driver, and then she went up and hit a huge leg drop. Yeah, but
a flying leg drop and only got a 2 count, and both moves and getting a 2 count pissed me off.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel like being dropped on your head by a pile driver, that should put you out for at least a 3 count.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're on the mat and somebody jumps off the top rope, 4 or 5 feet up high, and 180 pounds or whatever, Bull Wade, dropping a leg drop on you, that should put you down for a 3 count.
Well,
especially with a pile driver first, then a flying leg drop.
Fair enough.
Well, I guess that's just my
personal. That's the story that the match was telling. The match, like, in some matches it keeps you down, but in some matches it doesn't. That's just what the story was telling.
I guess that's just my personal taste, though.
Fair enough. So, go to the. A lot more of that, a lot of good stuff. So Blaze finally hits three or four German suplexes and finally is able to win the match.
So yeah, Leonard Blaze is the new women's champion. Congratulations.
Yep.
Well, if you could have won the title the night before on WrestleMania.
So you give your rating first, because I'm sure it's going to be lower.
1 star.
3.5 stars.
If that's your prerogative, homie.
So what happens after she wins the match, though?
I guess I jumped to the conclusion who this was, but I said Bertha Faye attacked her.
Ah, oh, you were right.
Okay, good, because it looked like Bertha Faye, but she had, like, face paint on.
Yeah.
So I was kind of confused. I guess in kind of like a leather outfit, I'm so used to seeing Bertha Faye in, like, the flowery costume that makes her look like a joke.
Right, so, like, I read about this. I can't confirm any of it because it's all secondhand, but, like, apparently what they really wanted to do was bring in Bertha Faye as her old persona, the Monster Ripper, and she was going to actually feud with Bull Nakano, but then they found that, well, and she was going to feud with Bull Nakano because Alundra Blaze was going to be off screen getting some surgery.
Some facial surgery?
No.
Some belly button surgery?
No. A little higher, a little north of the belly button there, Dirty Dog.
Okay, I'll think about it.
So Bull Nakano and Monster Ripper, Ronda Singh, or whatever they'd call her, we're going to feud. So that's why she was dressed like that. But then the story goes that they found some booger sugar in Bull Nakano's locker.
That's no good.
So then they fired her, suspended her or something. And then since Alundra was out getting the medical procedure, they, in that time, they changed Ronda Singh to Bertha Faye.
How sad.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to a commercial break. We come back with another commercial advertising WrestleMania 11 with Roddy Piper.
Yeah.
For an encore presentation.
Right.
Then we go to the main event of the evening.
I don't know if I'd call this the main event.
I was going to say, after the Piper WrestleMania 11 commercial, I paused it to get up to go to the bathroom, do whatever. I can't remember what I was doing because I'd watched this last weekend. And, you know, I paused it and noticed, like, there was only, like, I think between 8 and 10 minutes left of the episode. I'm like, what the hell? There's one more match and another interview segment. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Then Men on a Mission came out.
Yeah, it was a short match, though.
Because when they came out, Vince was, you know, explaining that, you know, Men on a Mission just recently turned heels.
Uh-huh.
They dropped their manager, Oscar.
Now Bound to Sound. That's what Jim Cornette calls them.
Yeah, so, yeah, they were kind of talking about that, you know, while I was Googling who they're facing, which is Ben Jordan and Tony Roy.
Yep.
Congrats, boys. You're on the internet. Now on our podcast. So, yeah, Men on a Mission attacked their opponents right before the bell. Ryan and Cornette McMahon tells us, yeah, they recently turned heel and all that, what I just said. You know, turn their backs on their fans.
Mm-hmm.
I got an email distracting me by Vince Russo. Damn you, Vince Russo. Then I noticed that Mabel squashed one of his opponents and picked up the victory.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on the Men on a Mission tag team heel squadron?
I guess I would like to see a few more matches of theirs as heels to really make a sound opinion. Yeah, give them a sound opinion.
Yeah, I wish that they would have ran with this a little longer instead of shooting Mabel into the main event.
Well, yeah, to get especially give them especially Mabel, more time to learn his craft.
Well, he'd only been heel for like 3 months before he's main eventing pay per views.
And wasn't wrestling for that long before he was main eventing, like a couple of years at most.
Yeah, like we talked about last week, he was only 24 at the time. He had just turned 24. He was young. He hadn't been wrestling that long.
So yeah, the winners were Men on a Mission.
Yep.
What do you rate this match?
Half star.
I rated this match lower.
Oh gosh, is it the dud?
This match I rated as a Dave Meltzer's famous dud.
Ooh, dud.
I was distracted by Vince Russo's email, and this match sucked.
Why did Vince Russo send you?
Well, because I signed up. Well, I guess it's my fault on that, but I guess I signed up, you know, for email things to get the first podcast and la-di-da-di freaking da.
Oh, okay.
I need to figure out how to unsubscribe to his emailing list.
Okay, awesome.
Damn you, Vince Russo.
All right, so next is the promotion that I'm going to enter, which is to win a house.
Yes. I wish we were still able to win that house. I would like to have a pool.
Not toxic landfill.
I would like to have a pool in my house.
In your house?
Yes, in my house.
Oh.
And we can send a postcard to in this house too. WWF in your house, P.O. Box 7406, Melville, New York 11775. People who put this podcast on pause, get a pen and paper ready because I'll repeat it once again. Oh, I guess also get somebody to buy a postcard. And again, write to WWF in your house. P.O. Box 7406, Melville, New York 11775. And your entry must be received by May 12th, 1995.
I think we missed our deadline.
Or get a hold of Doc Brown, jump in his vehicle, go 88 miles an hour, and go back in time.
Okay, that's a good choice.
Yeah. So then we found out that Ra is brought to us by Baby Ruth.
Cool. Right?
Jim Cornette told us that. Then we come back from commercial to Vince McMahon is in the ring and welcomes Shawn Michaels and his bodyguard Sid.
Yep.
Then McMahon tells
Michael's
us
Michael's back is screaming.
Yes. Poor Sean. I guess what you get for being short. But McMahon tells us that Michaels isn't the WWF champion and asks Michaels how he feels. Then he said he feels like he was ran over the night before.
By a steamroller.
Purr, purr.
And then McMahon goes, perhaps a diesel-powered steamroller.
Michael said that he had trouble focusing during his match at WrestleMania.
Yep.
And called Diesel Big Daddy.
Yeah.
And accepts Diesel's rematch. Then Shawn Michaels said, I don't need a bodyguard. Sid, you can take the night off for my rematch. Then Sid got pissed off.
Not happy about being told to take the night off.
Yeah, so he got pissed off. Then we go to a commercial break. When Sid was chewing out Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, he was not happy.
You want to tell us what happened when we came back from the commercial break?
He turned away, and then Shawn turned away, and then he hit Shawn.
Do you know how many times he powerbombed him?
I do not know how many times he powerbombed him.
Same here. I'm sad.
Oh, okay.
So I guess we might have to...
You're going to enlighten us.
Maybe for a future episode, we might have to watch episode 106 to find out.
Oh, well,
Maybe, just maybe. I don't know. So, but Vince tries to go to a commercial break. Sid barks. Then we go to a commercial break. And then we come back. Michaels is laid out. Sid is standing over him. And Diesel came out to make the save. And we fade to black. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, if you guys didn't know, this approach, one of the reasons why I picked this episode, because, Sid turning on Shawn Michaels. And I feel like they took a commercial break at the right, at the perfect moment.
For sure.
Because this was one of the first, that angle was the first earliest memory I have from watching Monday Night Raw.
Oh, nice.
And I got my memory confused when I watched this Raw because I remember watching Sid powerbombing Michaels I don't know how many times. And they must have showed it in the following week's Raw.
Well, in prepping for the SummerSlam retrospective show, they show it all the way to SummerSlam, so I watched it on that even.
Okay. So yeah, well, so I assumed that on episode 106 the following week on Raw that, you know, they showed what Sid did, and because yeah, wasn't Sean written off of TV for a while after this?
Yes.
Okay, then he came back, what, right around King of the Ring, if I remember correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that was this week's Monday Night Raw, episode 105. Yeah, 105 from April 3rd, 1995.
All right. Who is your main eventer?
My main eventer is the one, the only, the icon, the main event, Shawn Michaels.
All right, cool.
Just because I felt like his promo was awesome, and I feel like, you know, like I said, with the commercial break and when they came back, Michaels, well, also, you know, Michaels did get hit by a few power bombs, but I think Michaels is, you know, putting over the match he had with Diesel a few weeks later from WrestleMania 11 the night before, that, you know, Michaels put over how that match was and how he wasn't focused and Lottie freaking daw, you know, telling Sid he needs to stay home next time he challenges Diesel, and I just feel like Michaels, well, I guess we didn't really, in my opinion, we really didn't watch that great of episode of Monday Night Raw. So yeah. Michaels didn't have much to beat, in right. my opinion. Okay. But that's why I picked Shawn Michaels.
Cool. All right, my main eventer is alleged Booger Sugar Taker, Bull Nakano. I thought she was awesome. I thought that submission move was great. I thought all of her offense looked spectacular. I thought she was doing a good job selling that she's bigger, but these kind of high flying moves are taking her down. I thought she was awesome.
I do feel like she helped carry the Alondra Blades to a great match, as fast paced as that match was, which wasn't my taste, but I'll see that match was the highest rating match for me on this night. So my jobber, you might not like this because they were overcooked. My jobber was well done. Because they were made out to be jobbers and their tights were nasty.
All right, fair enough.
Who are your jobber? Who is your jobber?
My jobber is Nicholas Totoro.
I don't blame you.
He was the worst part on NYPD Blue. His character was dumb.
Because wasn't he saying that him and Vince are tight and he should leave NYPD Blue to come work for Vince?
Yeah, I bet the NYPD Blue producers were like, sure, get him gone, man.
He sucked.
I can't imagine he's not annoying, so.
Well, he is annoying, so whatever.
He's my jobber.
Okay, then we might as well go to the top five list for this week.
All right, tell us what the top five is.
This week. I, you know, since we, you know, normally you and I go back and forth between the regular cast on, you know, who picks what show to review and who does the top five list, and I felt like, you know, because Yokozuna and Owen Hart were the tag team champions as of WrestleMania 11, I wanted to do a top five list of odd pairing tag teams. You know, as in, like, Yokozuna and Owen Hart.
For sure.
So, like, pretty much two guys who, like, odd pairing tag teams, you know, like, two guys who were known as single starters who got teamed up. And my number five has to be Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, the Outsiders.
Oh, okay, cool.
Granted, you know, they're known as, you know, probably one of the greatest tag teams in WCW history. But, you know, they made... their name known in WWF before they jumped ship as Diesel and Razor Ramon. Diesel was WWF champion, Intercontinental champion, tag team champion. Razor was, I think, like a four-time Intercontinental champion. Both of them were, you know, known single stars before they jumped over. And, yeah, they held the WCW tag team title several times and ran over the tag team division over there. The Outsiders are my number five.
Cool. My number five is the only side of night, Yokozuna and Owen Hart.
Good tag team.
Yep. We talked about it, so.
Okay. My number four are the two-man power trip, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H. Because, you know, this would have been right after WrestleMania 17 in 2001, before the Invasion storyline. That, you know, those two came off of a feud ending at No Way Out in 2001. You know, a best 2 out of 3 falls match. You know, which Triple H won, then Stone Cold would go on and win the WWF title from The Rock, turning heel at WrestleMania 17, and those two would team up, win the tag team titles for like a month and a half or whatever before Triple H tore his quad and all that fun jazz. But yeah, I felt like those two were, I think, probably one of the, I guess, I really enjoyed during that time, I really enjoyed their tag team because I thought it was cool, you know, two guys who clash so many times, who had a blood feud, now are friends and are teaming up together and are, you know, held the WWF title, the Intercontinental title, and the tag team titles together. I was very, very impressed.
Nice. All right. My number four is Jericho.
Ooh.
Jericho and Big Show. Liked them a lot, 2009, when they held the titles. I thought they did a really good job of going back and forth and defending it to all comers. I thought, and elevating it kind of to main event status. I liked what they did a lot.
Okay. Then I'll get into my number three. Has to be Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit.
Oh, okay.
The guys who defeated Stone Cold and Triple H for the tag team titles. Yeah. You know, just because, you know, same thing with Stone Cold and Triple H, I said for my number four, those two had a blood feud, you know, over the Intercontinental title, had one of the, in my opinion, one of the greatest ladder matches ever at the Royal Rumble 2001. And when Jericho did the Walls of Jericho on Benoit on top of the ladder,
mm-hmm.
you know, those two feuded, you know, obviously with each other in WWF for, I don't know, over a year, year and a half, however long it was. You know, I just thought it was cool to see them tag together, you know, win the title, tag titles from Triple H and Stone Cold before Triple H got injured and held the titles for, I don't know, a month, month and a half, however long. Well, walked into TLC 4 on SmackDown, walked out as tag champs. You know, I just enjoyed their tag team. So they're my number three.
They are also my number three.
Ooh, good choice, yep. Beverly.
I like the Chris's. They were a good tag team. All the reasons you said.
So I guess I'll go into my number two, which had to be Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit.
Oh.
You know, I guess just like my number three and number four, you know, those two are two great technical wrestlers. You know, they've been feuding off and on. You know, then, you know, on, they were together on SmackDown. Was it 2002-ish, 2003? When Stephanie McMahon was a SmackDown general manager and wanted to have SmackDown tag team titles. Informed a bunch of, I don't know, eight tag teams, random tag teams, and Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit were thrown as a tag team together. And I also were the first tag team champions, and I wish those two would have been able to hold the tag team titles longer. So I felt like those two could have brought up the SmackDown tag team division more than what it was. And I thought they could have, those two could have brought out great tag matches out of, I think, Edge and Mysterio, who were tag champs for a while, like a week or whatever, you know, against Los Guerreros. Yeah, Kurt and Chris were awesome tag team, were my number two.
Nice. My number two is the aforementioned two-man power trip. Like, even though it's, I don't know, kind of a monopoly on all the belts being held by two guys, it is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of interesting, at least for, excuse me, for a little bit of time.
Fair enough. And my number one was your, I believe, number three.
Or number four, I don't remember. But my number one is Jericho. Chris Jericho and the Big Show. Because, you know, kind of like you said that, you know, when they won the tag team titles in 09, I feel like they brought up the tag team division. Enough so that at TLC that year in December, they main-evented that pay-per-view in a TLC match against Shawn Michaels and Triple H, the Generation X. And I felt like, you know, I guess DX held the tag titles for a little bit, kind of gave the tag title division, I don't know, I guess they kind of, I guess to me the tag division kind of seemed as a joke after they won it. But, you know, kind of with two, I guess four main eventers that held the tag team division titles, I felt like, you know, yeah, like you said with Jericho, that they brought up the division and helped it out in during that time when the tag team titles meant nothing.
Sure. All right, my number one. Hey,
Dude love, baby.
Dude Love and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I didn't even think about them. That's a good choice.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
They're my number one. I really like the pairing. It's an interesting odd couple thing. It's not totally like the feuding deal. It's just kind of a weird pairing between the two. I liked it a lot.
Good choice.
I had been kind of out of wrestling for a little bit because I didn't get any on my TV system at the time, and they were champs right when I got back in, so I really liked it a lot.
So yeah, that's a good choice. And you know, think of it, I think, you know, this is our fourth episode, or I think our seventh podcast altogether, because yeah, last week we did special cast number 3 with Jason Mann, the history of SummerSlam, then obviously this is our fourth regular episode. So yeah, I just want to thank you guys, you know, the fans, and also you, Mr. Beverly Hills, for doing 7 awesome podcasts so far. And as I say, yeah, let us know, tweet at us, you know, find us out on Facebook, you know, search up Main Event Status Radio, talk to us, let us know what you guys liked, if you guys enjoyed the special cast, you know, if you guys enjoyed Dean Stahl and I talk about CM Punk, if you liked Beverly and I talking with Ferran and Lucas from Pro Wrestling Weekly about the WWE Network, if you guys enjoyed Jason Mann talk about the history of SummerSlam, if you guys enjoyed the 4 Raws that we covered, or if you guys want us to cover other shows, hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on Twitter, to, you know, and all that. Talk to us, you know, let us know what you liked us to cover, what you enjoyed, what you didn't enjoy. I know I was talking to Dean Stahl on Twitter, and he liked us to cover some 80s wrestling sometime soon, which I'm sure we'll get to sooner rather than later.
Got it.
And also, you know, this podcast will be dropped the SummerSlam weekend. So I hope you guys have a great SummerSlam weekend. And for Beverly Hills, I hope that Brock Lesnar defeats John Cena, knocks a snot out of him, and walks home with the WWE World Heavyweight title.
Awesome.
So, I guess, do you have any closing thoughts, Beverly?
I do not, my friend.
Okay, so yeah, like I said, you know, this is episode 4, technically episode 7, but special cast don't count. So yeah, episode 4, we'll be back most likely next week. So I hope you guys enjoy SummerSlam 2014. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. And we will catch you guys at the matches.